as this child is born, they say to the parents, this child's not going to survive. You're just going to have to give it up. It stands no chance. We'll just put it in an orphanage and it will die over time.
Welcome back to Other People's Lives. I'm Joe Santagato.
I'm Greg Dybeck.
Just want to give a quick shout out to all of our patrons out there over at patreon.com/OPL show who are supporting the show. If you join our Patreon, you get access to bonus episodes and sometimes follow-ups with previous guests.
Yes, and now everyone, it's time to buckle up because honestly, from the bits and pieces of this story that we do know, I think we're in for a ride that's going to take us across a few different countries, through a few different decades, a little bit of history lesson. So trust us, there's a lot to talk about here. And as always, we have our guests on the line. So thanks so much for chatting with us today.
Hi there.
So it seems like in order to kick off this story, we kind of first need, I guess, a quick lesson on Chernobyl. If you're not familiar with Chernobyl, I have a short casual description. I've got my fake glasses on to make me look smarter. But basically, in 1986, in what was then the USSR, one of the reactors of the Chernobyl power plant exploded, which caused a mass amount of radiation. It's considered the worst nuclear disaster in history, and there have been an estimated number of deaths in the thousands, and the area around the power plant is still an exclusion zone because of how radioactive that area is. Now, before we get into how all this ties into your story, you know, I want to point out that a key topic surrounding Chernobyl is the fact that the Russian government essentially tried to cover up the severity of the event when it happened. They tried to hide it from the world. They didn't immediately evacuate civilians in the surrounding area, even though the radiation levels were deadly. And to this day, they've downplayed the number of deaths related to the event, despite countless reports of people dying from radiation or, you know, complications or cancer due to that radiation exposure. So basically sort of gives you proof that our governments don't always tell the truth and, you know, might not always have our best interests in mind, I guess you could say. So, you know, with all that said, can you explain to everyone listening what Chernobyl has to do with your story?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, like you said, with Chernobyl, it was a big disaster, but it wasn't actually until Sweden found out about it until the rest of the world knew about it, because like you said, Russia definitely tried to hide it from the rest of the world. But I was born 11 years after, so 1997, in Belarus, and Belarus was actually more affected than the country Ukraine, because Ukraine was where it happened, but because of the winds on when it happened, it was Belarus that got most affected. So I was born in 97, Belarus, but and throughout the pregnancy, I think my parents were under the impression, obviously medical staff were under the impression that my birth was fine, you know, the pregnancy was fine, because they didn't really have the technology they have nowadays. So they didn't have ultrasounds or whatever to see. But when I was born, basically they very quickly come under the realization this wasn't a normal birth. I came out with deformed arms, so I have like no arm on my right and half an arm on the left with two fingers. Definitely not normal. I had a brother who was born a year before that who had no deformities, whatever. So the birth was obviously affected by radiation poisoning throughout the pregnancy from either the mum or maybe the dad before the pregnancy actually happened through food or warmer food or water contamination.
And that's super common in that area. So you said Belarus was affected, and that's one of the outcomes?
Yeah, Belarus was definitely affected most, because obviously that's where most of radiation covered. So radiation, they have a really bad problem with radiation. There's a lot of places that did have to get evacuated. But like you said, Russia tried to cover this, and they didn't actually evacuate the places where needed at the time. So it got to the point where it was too late for evacuation. A lot of people were contaminated. But again, this was 11 years on after the radiation where I was contaminated. So it just kind of proves how much the contamination had gotten too fast. So 11 years on, I'm here getting born with birth defects, and they were still a bit like, oh, what's happening here? But again, it's not as common as uncommon as you think at that time, because there were a lot of births at that time where people had deformities and a lot of health issues where, you know, they couldn't really save a lot of these children, and a lot of them did die immediately after birth. But I mean, luckily I'm still here, but you know, my parents were told at the time that I wouldn't survive, you know.
And has it been confirmed that it was through water contamination?
There's no way of telling how the contamination occurred, but it was either from the father, so from the father before, you know, contraception or whatever, but most likely it was from the mother throughout the pregnancy, or early on in the pregnancy. She obviously had a bit of food, a bit of water that was contaminated with radiation, and of course that affected the pregnancy incredibly. But you know, it kind of proves, because I did have the brother that was only about a year older than me, like my birth brother, where he was born with no problems whatsoever, but the mother obviously contaminated since then. Again, this is 11 years on, and she got contaminated with my birth, which affected me.
Yeah.
Does that affect her in any way?
What's that, sorry?
I was going to say, does that affect her in any way if she...
No, I mean, she... As far as I know, she's perfectly healthy. The only affected person in this whole scenario is me, you know. But again, it's just birth deformities. It's no major health issues, nothing mentally, sorry. It's just all physical. It's just my arms, and that's it. That's the only thing that's affected in this whole thing. Whereas, like, you know, when the actual disaster happened, a lot of people were affected with cancers and a lot of thyroid problems as well, and it still is a big problem with thyroid problems, but luckily the only thing with me is my arms.
Yeah, but it's still crazy you were born 10 years after the fact, and it's just shows how terrifying, like, just radiation in terms of how it can affect people differently, the fact that it's this invisible danger. But so you mentioned that they didn't know that you were going to be born with these deformities that you have. So you were born, and you mentioned that they told your parents that they didn't think that you would survive. So what exactly happened, you know, when you were born? I know this is kind of a core part of this story here.
Yeah, no. So basically, like me, with a lot of other children, there was many children at this time and before that where, you know, we were born, they realized, oh no, this baby has a lot wrong with it. Obviously, they don't realize the real health risks at the time, but they realize, oh, this child has a lot wrong with it. So they immediately, and I mean immediately, as soon as this child is born, they say to the parents, oh, this child's not going to survive. You're just going to have to give it up, you know. It stands no chance. We'll just put it in an orphanage and it will die over time. You know, you can just leave it there. It'll be fine, you know. And of course, they did this also. Again, it's the Russian Federation where they tried to hide away all these children with these birth defects. So, you know, I was born with my arms. They just tell the parents, you know, they're going to die. Send them to an orphanage and that's it. The parents don't hear anything from them because they just believe what they're told. And again, you know, these people know, you know, they might have a chance of surviving, but they don't care.
So that's what happened to you in the hospital. They told your parents that you wouldn't survive, and then that's it. They just take you away from your parents.
Yeah, I mean, from birth, they tell them, like, this child's not going to survive. They take us away, and that's it. They hear nothing from us. You know, that's it. They think, oh, my baby's dead, and that's it. That's what they get told, so that's what they believe.
I'm just like confused as like a parent. Like, how is there no way to like kind of follow up and like?
Yeah, I guess because they don't have the technology, they don't have the internet, they don't have these ways of following up on these things they're told. And because, you know, it's a doctor or a nurse telling you this thing, so you're gonna believe them, really, aren't you? But you can't, there's no ways of following up on these stories that you're told or these facts that you're told. You just think, oh, this baby looks completely wrong. Okay, if you tell me it's going to die, it's going to die. I'll just leave it at that, you know?
And you believe that the reason why they're doing that is to try and cover this up?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the Russian government, they didn't... Well, to begin with, you know, they covered up the whole disaster, and that just tells you a lot, really. They wanted to cover up the disaster itself, and then, you know, they wanted to cover up all the health issues that followed on from the disaster, and that meant all the, you know, the births that were affected directly from the disaster.
Yeah, and still a decade later, that's crazy that they're still basically going to those measures to, you know, cover up any trace of Chernobyl and the radiation still affecting people in the area. That's crazy to hear. Wow.
Definitely.
It's also like, I mean, this may sound like morbid, but at the same time, it's like if they were trying to cover this up and, you know, basically stealing babies from their families and trying to hide them through orphanages, wouldn't after a while, if there was like a significant number of children with birth defects, that people would be able to put two and two together, right?
Well, that's it. I mean, it wasn't... My adoptive family actually only found out about these birth defects through a documentary that they saw on the TV one evening, and I think it was documenting all the after effects of Chernobyl, and I think one of them was all these children with birth defects. Obviously, I don't think the Russian Federation or the government really approved this documentary, but it got shown by a lot of English viewers, and this is when a lot of people sort of started to find out about this. And again, it was only about 10 years later.
So you're taken from your family and you're put into this orphanage. Do you know, even if you don't have, you know, a memory of time spent in the orphanage because you were so young, do you know what these orphanages were like, and I guess how you were eventually able to get connected to a family?
Yeah, so basically I was put in the orphanage from the get-go, and these orphanages were very low maintained. There was a lot of money going into these orphanages. There wasn't a great amount of staff, and a lot of these kids that were putting into these orphanages were going to die, you know. There was no doubt about it. They were very sick children. And I guess I was lucky enough, there was a documentary about children like us, and it documented into the UK, and there was a charity in the UK that sort of helped these sort of children in these orphanages in these countries, and they helped bring these children over to give them the health and stuff they needed. Not necessarily adopt them, but they helped them get the health they need, and sorry.
Yeah, so you sent over, I think it was the Chernobyl Children's Lifeline, you mentioned?
Yeah, so the charity Chernobyl Children's Lifeline, they try and help children affected by the disaster, if it was directly or indirectly. So if the children are born into the area, but of course they seem okay, but obviously there's a lot of health issues being in that area. So like I've said before, they have a lot of thyroid problems. So coming over to England, even just for a few weeks, helps with their health and their just their general health problems, and they come over, they get the health treatment they need, and they go back. But this charity, they at the time they adopted a few children out. So my adoptive parents, so I was adopted, I think I was 4 months old when I was first spotted in a little picture book, basically. So this charity got a load of pictures of little children with lots of problems with them. They put them in a little book, and like English parents that saw these children, they decided, okay, I want to adopt this child. So I was very lucky enough to be spotted out of a book.
I was gonna ask, were these orphanages made strictly for children with birth defects, or were they just a regular orphanage that they were just putting, you know, these babies that they were basically stealing from their families into these orphanages?
Yeah, so I think most of them were taken away from the families under the impression that they were affected by Chernobyl. No one wanted to know them, so they were put into these orphanages with a load of health risks. But yeah, I mean, that obviously there were some children that were probably put under with fine health, but you know, the parents didn't want them at the time, because again, this was in Russia, like a Russian sort of federation area. I mean, bearing in mind Belarus has got their independence in the 1990s, but they're still very Russian orientated, so a lot of parents at the time, you know, if they didn't want a child, it would go to an orphanage. So it was a very mixed children in the orphanage, you know, a lot of unhealthy children, a lot of okay children. It was just a case of, you know, a mix and match in the orphanages.
Yeah, so you got spotted in this book, luckily. I guess it's good to know that there were forces like working, you know, for you and other children to try to get this news out there. So a family in the UK saw you, and then, you know, at what point did this become official, and what was the process of them actually adopting you?
Okay. So obviously they went to this this charity after they watched the documentary, because my adoptive parents, they were told they could never have children. So what they decided to do is they wanted to adopt a child that had a lot of physical problems, where they knew that they could spend all their time and effort on to help this child. So they looked through a little picture book that they were given, and I think they chose a few pictures of children. Bearing in mind they were after a little boy to begin with. And I think they picked me out thinking I was a little boy, after realizing they were told I was a girl. However, I was cute enough for them to still go ahead with it. So the charity gave them this book. They said, look, choose what child you want. I think I have a little diary of what my adopted mum gave me. She said that the whole process of the adoption. So they chose me from the book. This was when I was 4 months old, actually. I think they chose me from the book. And it wasn't until 2 years and 4 months I actually came over to England, because they were obviously in England. It wasn't until 2 years and 4 months I was brought over to England to not essentially get adopted, but to get the medical treatment to begin with. Because obviously I was born in a very uncivilized place where they didn't have the money or resources to treat children like me who did have a lot of medical problems. So I came over on a medical visa, essentially, and you know, it wasn't until a few years later where I was finally adopted, because the adoption process was very hard and very difficult and very long, because obviously I was essentially a hidden child that they didn't want anyone to know about. So they made it very difficult for my parents to adopt me.
Yeah, no, it's amazing just to hear that. And, you know, I think hearing that this is a family who specifically went out of their way to find a child that would need help, that would need extra attention, medical care. I mean, that's a special type of person and special type of family. And that's incredible that they were able to find you. And like you said, it seems like it was not an easy process, basically adopting someone from the situation that you're in. And it's for the fact that it took 2 years and they, you know, stuck with that to make that happen. It's just incredible how things are able to work out that way.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, even when they got me at 2 years and 4 months, it wasn't until I was about six, you know, until they finalized the adoption, because it was so much. And also, it wasn't just time and effort, it was also a lot of money into this adoption, and they you know, they proceeded with it and they persevered. You don't really want to mess with Russian governments they persevered and they got with it. And it wasn't until a few years after I was adopted, actually, where they completely stopped adoptions from Belarus into England. So I was very lucky in that sense, where I was adopted at the time I was.
So when you were adopted and now you're growing up with this family, at what point did you find out that you were adopted? And also, at what point did you find out that you were basically stolen from your birth parents?
Yeah, so basically, you know, you grow up and you hear little details growing up, basically. So, you know, I knew I was from Belarus, and I knew it was, I wouldn't say I knew a specific age, but I would say about from 8 or 9, I came to the realization, you know, it was a thing called Chernobyl. It was a disaster, and it wasn't something that, you know, a lot of people knew about. Because a lot of people from the UK would look at me and they would just think, oh, this child is born as an effect of thalidomide, which was also a problem at the time where, like, children were born with deformities. But it would be me, a little child, like, oh, wait, no, it's not thalidomide, it's Chernobyl. And then you get these jaws drop and they're like, what? But it's just something I've always grown up and known, and I'm thankful for that I've always known about where I'm from and how I was made and stuff.
Yeah, so do they eventually, you know, really come out and, you know, explain to you that you have a family out there? And did you ever try to get in touch with, I guess, your birth parents or anyone back in Belarus?
Yeah, so I knew I had birth parents. I knew there was another set of parents that had birthed me, but I knew nothing about them until I was about eight years old, where, you know, the Chernobyl Children's Lifeline, they were the charity that brought me over to England, but they were also the charity that I think it was my adoptive family that wanted to actually know about my birth family. They wanted to get in contact with them, so they decided to get in contact with the charity, and they found my adoptive parents, actually, my adoptive mum. Because I think after the birth, my adopted parents split up because obviously the effects of the birth hit them. But I'd say about 8 years old, I come to the realization I did have a family there. I had an older brother, I had my mum, I had my grandparents, I had an aunt, I had cousins, you know.
Yeah, so did you end up getting in touch with them?
We had raised the money for them to come over to England. So I had my mum and my birth brother, who was just a year older, absolutely fine, no defects whatsoever. He came over to England, both of them, and it was really great, actually. They came over for a weekend. Obviously, it wasn't much to begin with because it was the first time seeing them, but we gave them a lot because, obviously, in Belarus, it's not a rich country. They don't have much. So we did everything for them. They came over, and it was actually really amazing to see them. But obviously, for a child that's only like 9, 10 years old, I didn't feel that connection with them. But, you know, it was just something nice at the time.
Do you continue to keep in contact with them?
Yeah. So, I mean, they came over 3 times. So I had my mum and brother. I came over the first time. They came over 3 times, so we raised the money 3 times for them to come over. So I had my mum and brother that came over the first time. I had my mum, brother, and grandmother. Well, bearing in mind, this is all on the mother's side. I had my mum, brother, and grandmother come over the second time. And then I had my grandmother and brother that came over the third time. So they came over 3 times, and, you know, every time it was such an amazing thing. We would host massive parties for them with all the friends and family, because everyone was just so happy that we finally found my birth family. Because, you know, bearing in mind, they were told I was dead, so the first time they heard that I was alive, it was just like amazing. They realized I was in England, and the next thing they wanted to do was come and see me. So that's what we did, basically. So they came over and saw me.
Yeah, that must be like one of the biggest shocks when you think about, you know, your birth parents in that position, literally living their entire lives thinking that their child died, you know, at birth or shortly after, just to find out that you've gone on to live essentially, what, 8, 9 years in a completely different country now with another family. So I can't imagine what it would be like, you know, to reunite with them. Were you able to communicate with them? Did they speak any English, or was there kind of like a language barrier?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, they didn't really speak any English. I didn't speak any Russian at the time. And so the Chernobyl Children's Lifeline, they provided a translator. So we had the translator the first time, and I think the second and third time, by that point, we just used Google Translate to translate whatever we wanted to say. But I mean, over time, I've sort of learned a little bit of Russian, and my my birth brother has learned a bit of English, so there's a little bit of communication. But again, it's very hard to communicate to them. But I, my grandmother speaks to me a lot, and I just use Google Translate, and we speak through there.
Yeah. So, you know, how does this, looking back now, you know, how does this story and this personal history, you know, I guess, play into your life? Because you, you know, throughout so much of this story, you're kind of coming of age, you know, you're still young at this point to, I think, really, you know, internalize and understand maybe everything that's going on. But now that you're older and you're able to look back at these moments and, you know, understand what your early childhood was like, yeah, you know, how does that kind of affect you to this day?
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I was just a typical child, you know, I didn't realize what was going on, essentially. I just, you know, I knew what I got and that was it. I didn't think much behind it. But now growing up, I realize, you know, what I got was amazing, really. And the amount of luck that went into me being here where I am today. And, you know, at the time, you know, when I first found out about my birth family, I don't know, I wouldn't say I was stoked. You know, there was my adoptive family that were amazed at the fact that we found my my birth family, but me as a 8-year-old, 9-year-old, I didn't have much to think about it because I had my family in England and that's all I knew. But now sort of looking on, I realize, you know, there's a lot to it, you know, and my birth family do feel a lot for me and they want the best for me, and so do my, you know, my adoptive family. It's sort of getting to that point where I do have two families and I need to keep two families updated in my life, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like it's amazing that, you know, a story like this where you're kind of, you know, ripped from your family at birth, and, you know, it, I feel like it's even harder then to try and find out who your birth parents are. So the fact that you were able to do that, and also the fact that you said that, you know, they stopped letting people from England adopt, you know, shortly after that you were adopted. Like, this is all like very fortunate for you in your situation. To be able to find them, and like, I think that it's you know, it's a lovely thing that you were able to find your birth parents and like keep a relationship with them as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. I was I was extremely fortunate. My adoptive family, my parents, they were told they couldn't have children, so they went all out in this, going for this child that had nothing, to then, you know, a few years later have three children of their own, which was, you know, a miracle really in their eyes. Being told that they couldn't have children, they had three children of their own plus me. It was very lucky that they, you know, they chose me at the time, you know.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, that's it's just, you know, to come from such unfortunate circumstances that are so out of your control and your family's control, to, you know, now just to be able to, you know, be fortunate in this way and have that family and be able to, you know, receive the help, the medical attention. And, you know, I think overall, you know, this is an important conversation because we're not just talking about something, you know, from the past. And I'm actually on the Chernobyl Children's Lifeline website now, and this is still up and running. And it still says here that, you know, that throughout the UK, they raise money to bring children over for what they're calling recuperative breaks away from high background radiation levels, basically so that these children can just take, you know, weeks in the UK to enjoy uncontaminated food, breathe clean air, allow their immune systems to recharge. And this organization is still looking for volunteers and host families to bring these children over. So it just goes to show that there's still children, you know, in these areas, in Belarus, in Ukraine, that are, you know, essentially experiencing what you experienced as a child. And that's crazy to think that all these years removed, you know, that this is still an issue, still a problem. And it's for sure an issue that, you know, is not in the mainstream. And, you know, I've never really heard anyone talk about this or even be aware that it's still happening to this day.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, before my parents adopted me, that's how they got to know the charity. They used to host children from the area who were contaminated, who were living in these contaminated areas where they didn't have fresh food and water. They would host a couple of children each summer, I think it was from like 11 to 15 year olds, where they would host a couple of children each year just to give them that extra life and, you know, the health and the care that they needed. And yeah, that, I mean, that's how they got to know the whole thing, is to host these children, you know, from this one little documentary that was shown, I think, one year. They decided to host these children and they decided to adopt. It was all from this charity, really.
Wow. Yeah, it's, you know, I know for us, having not really known, you know, that this was even an issue or something still happening, it's, you know, crazy to hear, and it's super eye-opening. So, you know, we really thank you for sharing this, you know, personal journey and, you know, the story of your life to, you know, kind of help bring attention to this.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. No worries.
I want to talk to you guys about Native deodorant, which is by far the best deodorant that I've ever used. And Native blocks odor. It smells amazing. But the best part is truly that it's made with better ingredients. So I still remember finding out when my old generic deodorant I was using was full of things like aluminum, other ingredients that I didn't want on my body. But with Native, I know that I'm not getting any of that. And right now I'm using their cucumber and mint scent, which is incredible. It lasts all day. The scent is the perfect strength, I think. It feels great on the body. It's like not hard, it's not clumpy, it's not too wet. You know, all those issues I've had with past deodorants, I don't have with Native at all. And the best part is Native is risk-free to try. And every product comes with free shipping within the US. You get free 30-day returns and exchanges. There's a reason that Native has over 14,000 five-star reviews. That's not something that happens by accident. A lot of people love this brand. And if you haven't checked it out already, seriously, I use this every day. I don't plan on ever stopping, you know, using Native. And do what I did, make the switch to Native by going to nativedeo.com/OPL or use the promo code OPL at checkout and get 20% off your first order. That's nativedeo.com/OPL or use the promo code OPL at checkout for 20% off your first order.
Dude, that whole story was kind of wild. I honestly, like, I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't know too much about Chernobyl, and I didn't watch the show, which I heard was amazing, but I know.
I watched it twice, by the way.
You watched it twice?
Yeah. It's that good.
I heard it.
Chernobyl on HBO. If you haven't seen it, that'll teach you everything you need to know.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's wild to hear this story about how not only, like, it's already crazy that, you know, you are basically stolen from your family, or you were born during this time where things were happening and affecting like everyone's birth or whatever, but you're hearing about this sort of, I don't want to say conspiracy because we know what it is, but just stealing these babies from their families to try and like cover up the fact of like the severity of the situation, being a part of that, and then, you know, being able to find your birth parents after that. Like, there's just so many layers to this story, and it's just wild.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it was such a disaster in the moment for what it was, but it's crazy because the repercussions that it had and that it's still extending to today. Like, don't quote me on the number, but I'm pretty sure the official number of deaths that like the Russian government claims from Chernobyl is like 27 or something like that, when clearly, you know, thousands died almost immediately from the radiation exposure. The level, like the cancer levels in children, has skyrocketed in the surrounding areas. She's a perfect example, like just having parents in that area and then to just be born with those deformities. But still, it goes to show you, like you said, yeah, not a conspiracy, but just a government going out of its way to try to minimize, you know, this disaster and cover up elements of it, and literally just snatching babies from their parents to just not have deformed children out there because of radiation. I mean, it's hard to wrap your head around.
I wonder how it feels for her to realize that that had happened to you. You know, like you were taken from your family at birth.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It's tough. Like, she admitted.
Like, they lied to your parents.
Yeah. It's almost like just hearing her talk about it, that it's just like an expected thing. Yeah, that's just what our government
does. That's just what it is. Yeah.
In that area, that's just how it is. And no one has the power to fight back. No one is going to question authority, like a doctor or a nurse or someone in that position, because, you know, there is such poverty and the standard of living is lower, and you just kind of take it as it comes, I guess, is kind of like the sense that I got from it, where, you know, she was almost just like, yeah, that's the way.
It is what it is, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just wild, man. Like, I'm just trying to even think of that happening, like lying to them. And also the fact that not only are you taken from your family, this and that, but you find out who your biological family is, they think you're dead.
Yeah.
And then you are a real life person who's 8 or 9 when they first met, I believe she said. Like,
yeah.
what is that like? Your family thinks you're dead. And then you're like, by the way, I'm alive.
You pop up with an English accent and you can't even communicate with your birth parents because you don't speak the same language. That's insane.
That's like just wild, dude.
Yeah.
It's a crazy story. And like, you know, it's no words. Like, it's crazy that there's people out there with stories like that. You know what I mean? And this has probably happened to so many people from that area in that time, you know, things like that. Because she mentioned the orphanages had a bunch of sick kids and a bunch of people who had some sort of birth defects, and it was a common thing. So I wonder how many people this has happened to.
Yeah, think of how many, like, lost children, almost, in a sense, that, like, you know, or just taken from their families that never did get adopted, that had to live in, you know, those conditions of the orphanage for however long they lived, honestly. And there's really probably not many records around that. It's something really, you know, crazy to uncover. And like I said, just going through this, it's Chernobyl Children's Lifeline. It's ccll.org.uk. You know, just to see how relevant this still is now. You know, this isn't an old site. This is up to date. They're still raising funds. They're still bringing kids here, not even to adopt, but just to say, like, hey, do you want to bring a child over to the UK so they can breathe fresh air for, you know, a few days before we send them back?
That's so wild.
Yeah, I was, I'll admit, like, I was definitely, you know, unaware of this. I think how far-reaching, you know, the effects of that disaster, and not just the disaster, but how it was handled after, and, you know, the government trying to cover it up, or maybe not making the exclusion zone big enough, or not evacuating people in the area soon enough because they didn't want to, you know, cause havoc or chaos. You know, those were decisions that were made that, you know, now decades and generations later are still having an impact. And, you know, for her, you know, to speak to her, I think it's, you know, it's great. It's just great to hear, you know, how much luck she was able to have after being born into those circumstances, how fortunate she was to, you know, find this family and now be living comfortably, I hope, you know, it seems. So that's at least, you know, really good part of the story that started out in a really ugly way. And also shout out to her parents who adopted her, because like I said during the show, like, that's, those are special types of people, you know, who go out of their way to find misfortunate children, children who need extra care and attention, and just say, that's for us. Like, the one that no one else wants, the one that people might, even people who want to adopt just might think this might be too much work or too much strain on us. Like, no, this is what we want because we can provide something for them. That in itself is amazing to hear.
Yeah. There's so many crazy components to the story that are just like, it makes for one wild ride, honestly. Like, it's just crazy when you think about all of it. And it's even like a degree of funny that she just told that whole thing so casually, just like,
so
yep. fucking taken right from the hospital, and you know, here's the thing. Yeah.
I guess that's the positive of it, is that all of this happening to her so young and as a baby,
it's at been least her reality.
She doesn't. Yeah, she doesn't have these memories, or she doesn't necessarily have, you know, as much trauma. Like, you know, these aren't things she's reliving. So I guess that's a good thing in this sense. She, by the time she was able to be old enough to, you know, form her memories and her relationships, she was luckily in a good and secure place.
For sure. Yeah.
But
well,
wow,
crazy episode. But for anyone out there who wants to write into the show, if you feel like you know, you have something that's good for an episode, don't hesitate to reach out to us. Go to oplshow.com, fill out the contact form, send us an email, and we will schedule something out.
Yeah, follow us on Instagram at OPL Podcast, Patreon at patreon.com/OPL Show. We got a bunch of bonus episodes. We got follow-ups. We're doing a ton of fun stuff there. So you get all these additional episodes that will never air on this main channel. So if you want more of us, that's where you can go, and it helps support the show. So that is all we got.
Yep, that is all. See you guys next time.